CliffCentral.com.
Good morning. Gareth is stuck in traffic, which means that people still go to work, which is a good thing. And good things are what we are here for. Is it not, C.S. Linguini?
It very well is, Benjamin Karpinski.
Right. Well, today is going to be a shit show. There's no other way to really describe it. Thanks to politics, thanks to an evil tyrant and a chief who runs this country. There's going to be horrible news today.
You are so optimistic and are ready for the day.
It's spot on, though. I mean, we've got what looks to be a speculation can be trusted. A man who is completely incompetent at running a country, then cries when he's held accountable, could be the new finance minister of this country. So you know what? Before Gareth gets in here, before all this news comes out of Mabali Maloy's mouth in the news, let's have a good story. How about that? So every morning, right?
Oh, whew, you have one. Because I'm like, what what is good in the world right now? Woolies still sells those donut balls and icing.
I wasn't asking you to stand and deliver here. Like, okay, right. Good story.
No, I'm trying to be optimistic here. So I'm like, what else is good in my life right now?
Well, okay. So you know Brent Lindekew, right, obviously? So he's the good things guy.
Brent Lindekew.
Now, a couple of months ago, I interviewed him for my show here on Cliff Central, the Barnes Show.
How did that intersect?
Well, I wanted to talk about being positive about rugby, right?
Oh,
and he's positive, and I know about rugby, so it was a bit of a stretch. I was putting two and two together, or one and one together, to make two. And it was a really cool chat. And just being around Brent, you kind of get reminded that, you know, life doesn't have to always be so crap. Even though today, like I said, nothing really good is going to come out of today other than bad news, right?
No, don't say that.
And tomorrow. But see, look, I mean, I think we can go past the stage now of being so naive as to think, oh, everything will be okay.
Okay, it's not being naive. It's trying to reassure yourself. Otherwise, you're just going to slide into more shit.
Exactly. So anyway, I've been going to the site called Beautiful News, right? It's a News 24 initiative. And, you know, you got to credit these places. They put a lot of stuff out there, which we do use. So you got to credit them. And every single day there is beautiful news. And this is how I start my day. So there's a small video. You watch it. It's like a minute and a half. People around the country doing really amazing things.
Okay. So it is South African based.
Yep. Completely.
It's not like a dog somewhere sniffing its own tail.
That is so weird. Today's story involves a dog sniffing.
I knew it.
So I wanted to play this to you before Gareth gets in here because he is very much on his way. He is close. But there is a dog that can sniff diabetes. Now, judging by this awkward silence, you think I'm either making this up or you just lost interest already. But there is a dog who is trained to sniff out when your sugar levels rise and fall, because if you got bad diabetes, right, you can quite quickly spiral into a position where it's not very good. So anyway, before Gareth gets in here, I want to play this Stacey Maguire's basic life story of how there's this dog. It's a Swiss Shepherd called Gretchen. And Gretchen is, let me not butcher the story anymore. And let me actually just get straight into it because I found this really inspiring this morning. I woke up feeling a bit, politics again is going to ruin everything. But hey, then I saw this story. I thought I'd share it with you.
Okay.
If it would play, it would be great.
I am the first person in South Africa to get a diabetic assist dog who smells my blood sugar levels change. I'm a very severe type 1 bristle and unaware diabetic. Gretch is a Swiss Shepherd who was imported from America and saves my life on a daily basis. Having a severe chronic illness is a huge challenge. Before Gretch, I used to have hypoglycemic episodes and seizures at least once a week. I'm on the latest technology that's available in South Africa. It wasn't accurate enough, so the only alternative was diabetic alert service dogs. The process is not easy at all. It does take up to a year to train dogs like Gretchen and is very expensive. Gretch alerts me by either pawing me, or she will sit in front of me and stare at me or bark at me. Gretchen is able to either trigger an alarm or alert the nearest person should I be in danger and need help. So when my blood sugar levels dropped, I had to send through scent samples, which were basically saliva on cotton wool, and then she was trained on that specific scent. Gretchen's actually able to smell my blood sugars change up to an hour before the blood glucose monitor can. If I'm not responding to her alert fast enough for her, then she will grab my glucose tester and she will bring it to me and like hit me with it to say, test now. My goal is to start a training program to train dogs like Gretchen in this country to help people like me.
Isn't that absolutely amazing? An hour before modern machines, science, all that kind of stuff can sense the blood sugar levels, this dog will coach you and say, oi.
Yeah.
Get it together.
It sounds like Gretchen is far more useful and a lot more valuable than most humans.
That is absolutely amazing. But how did this start? How did someone go, like, okay, obviously guide dogs are amazing, right?
Mm.
Because you're blind and the dog sees for you and it takes you away and they're cute Labradors. Everyone wins. But this is like on a whole nother level. Do you reckon dogs like Gretchen look at blind dogs and go,
you're so average.
So working class. Because someone has at some stage gone, okay, right, well, diabetes is obviously a huge problem, but how can we detect this?
Yeah.
And then a whole bunch of doctors got together and then obviously went, well, it's quite simple. We look at pulse rates and blah, blah, blah. But then some guy was like, no, hang a second. How about dogs? Dogs sniff really well, right? Dogs work in airports. They can sniff drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do all kinds of things because they've got obviously incredible sense of smell. I find this story absolutely incredible. It really is. And just goes to show, like, we must do more with animals and less with people.
That's what I'm saying. More valuable than humans.
I mean, if we ever need another reminder that this is the truth of the world, here it is.
I didn't think we should go down that road, but okay, I hear what you're saying.
See, the dog smells diabetes. How on earth are you going to contest this against me?
Okay, Benjamin.
Okay, well,
yay.
Gareth is here, right?
Yeah.
So while you chew on the fact that dogs can save our lives with that stuff, I'm going to play a song by Good Luck. Gareth's going to sidle into the chair, and then we've got another beautiful Wednesday ahead for you.
Sorry, did you just say sidle?
Is it the right word?
Yeah.
Wow.
That works.
Now that's quite an impressive term for 6 a.m.
Do you want to take me on everything today?
No. I'm just very impressed by you this morning.
You are poo-pooing my diabetes-sniffing dog and not my vocabulary.
Not at all.
Anyway, Wednesday coming up. Good luck and the storm. Listen to the storm. There's no storm this morning, though. It seems like it's pretty much bone dry after weeks and weeks of rain. I wish that Cape Town could get its storm. They really need it badly. How many days of water left in the Cape?
Ooh.
Last time I checked, it was like 80 days or something, and then they'd be totally... What do we do when Cape Town completely runs out of water, by the way? What happens then?
Mm.
Does anybody know?
I don't know. I mean...
Well, I'm just curious why that question wasn't asked, like, maybe in Parliament 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Priorities, Ben.
I just know the people in Clifton will bath in their own champagne and wine.
Yeah, they can always use the champagne and wine. That's a good point. But the poor?
Poor, you know, they've been struggling for a while anyway.
Right.
So, I don't know. Maybe people from Cape Town should let us know what they plan to do.
Now, what are you going to do if they actually say to you, sorry, guys, there's no water. I mean, you're going to pack your stuff in the wagon and like start trekking north? What are you going to do? Imagine if everybody has to abandon the Cape because there's just no water. Because humans can't live in a place where there's no water. You know, that's number one. That's why deserts are unoccupied.
It'll just be like, you know, there's been no, like it's Chernobyl and you all have to evacuate
it's like
and
guys,
just leave.
We tried this. It has been completely a waste of time. Everybody pack up your shit and move inland. And where are we all going to accommodate all those Cape Townians?
Yeah, because they've got needs. Huh? They come with baggage.
Well, they accommodate the rest of us when we invade their spaces over December.
But we pay for the privilege.
Yeah, it's best tourism.
Yeah, but I mean, they'll move up here and they'll have their own money.
And listen, and we're there for like 3 weeks max.
Yeah, we don't come and move.
Yeah, but I mean, get ready, guys.
Mind you, I've heard that there are a lot of people. There's a huge immigration into the Western Cape. Like, the numbers are quite extraordinary.
From inland or from abroad?
From other parts of South Africa, mostly.
Hmm.
You know, a lot of people moved from Gauteng to the Cape. A lot of people moved from Durban to the Cape. So there's a net influx of immigration as opposed to outflow. So that could also be why there's less water for everybody, because there are more people. I mean, it's something to consider. Anyway, I got to sleep quite late last night because I had this Touch HD launch that I went to. Who did I see there? I saw Ari, and I saw Touch, and I saw Carolyn Stain, and I saw...
Oh, because it was held at Stain City.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And I briefly saw Nele.
Huh.
Hmm.
Has she started that morning show yet?
I think so. I actually don't know. Does anybody know?
No, she's only starting in April.
I was confused, but then Wackett was crying about his last show.
So who's been doing it in the meantime? Have they been doing replays? Can you imagine how boring that would be?
Because I know Alex, is Alex J doing it? Because he does everything else, doesn't he?
Shame.
They would have like...
What? I mean, in a good way. The guys have got talent for radio.
Well, don't they have somebody in an acting position like they do in boards, acting CEOs or acting board member, intermittent board? Don't they have that kind of setup currently?
They probably do. And, you know, it would probably be the kind of thing that management would think is a good idea, because management is such morons. Radio management, I can't say enough how disappointingly stupid they usually are. Because they'll think that way. They don't consider that your audience and a certain show, especially in the morning when you're getting ready for work or you're driving to work or whatever, that's your life. They think, oh, if we just move this chess piece here and move that chair, then the audience will be happy. They think the audience are morons. They're the morons. The audience know exactly what they want. They want familiarity. They want someone who makes them think. They want someone who makes them laugh. They want someone who makes them feel. These guys are like, let's move this around here. We'll just redo that. They will put up these boards here to say construction underway. Nothing to see here. They don't consider for a second what they're doing to their own product. Dummies. Anyway, good luck to them. I mean, I have not heard a single good thing about radio in the last 8 months, or maybe more. No one's going, oh, you've got to do this, you've got to check that out. There's something so exciting happening here. Nothing. So I think DJ Spoo, who joined the online movement the other day, and Touch and I have to do it all ourselves and bring the good people with us. Hey, team, from Stellenbosch University, the government has approached the engineering faculty in order to find solutions to the water problem. Well, again, TikTok, they didn't think about doing this before, did they?
Yeah, it's difficult to ride a horse once it's bolted.
Yeah. Someone says, I can't wait for the burning platform this week. Well, yeah, there's lots to talk about. Where does the Gupta TV get this political analyst that they had on yesterday? I don't know.
Well, who is the analyst? Do you have a name?
Don't know, but there was someone last night that said they're from the New Age. So, hello, and I moved on really quick. Like, yeah, I need to talk to you.
Okay, yeah. So it was at Stain City. Everyone there, you were schmoozing and boozing. What time did you end up leaving?
No, I was out of there by 9:30, but I only got to bed at like 11:30.
Ah. And exactly after the day where you were raving about
I was doing so well. But it's fine. Tonight I'll go and sleep really early.
You'll make up for it.
You watch.
Just sleep at 8:30.
Llewellyn says, hey, Gareth, please can you get Lucas in more? I would like to hear him talk about more than just his rabbits, which is very entertaining. I just feel there is more substance to him.
Mm.
Absolutely, including his dress sense.
Not really, hey. I got to tell you, there's not a lot going on there.
Yeah.
No, of course he does. Yeah, it's Midnight Mystery. It's rabbits.
See, but this is what's going to happen next month, right? Things are going to go back to normal. Things have been getting back to normal, but now we get the microphone back for Lucas.
Yeah. Because we'll have our studios.
We'll have a window back so you can hear the Hardy Dolls again.
That's right. That I'm not looking forward to.
And there's that laugh. I mean,
not like those Hardy
does. He's got the best laugh, yeah.
It does prove that we are broadcasting here from South Africa.
And live, yeah. Okay. A couple other messages rolling in. What's going on today? I haven't listened to the news. I haven't checked out any newspapers. I haven't been on Twitter.
Ooh, well, I mean,
what?
You must decide whether or not you believe this, some of the things that Julius Malema has been tweeting.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
What has he said?
Woo, Julius. I mean, should we get straight into the news?
We may as well. Yeah. I mean, if you've got so much of it, let's go. What has he said?
Okay, well, so yesterday, right?
Maybe I should play the news song and everything. We've got a new one, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Listen to this.
We love new additions.
This is Dari's daughter, Amy, who plays the recorder. I've never heard a recorder that sounded good. I'm not being horrible, but a recorder is a crappy instrument, right?
It's like the redheaded stepchild of the flute family.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really make too many notes. It's a horrible thing.
It's like the processed cheese of the flute family.
Correct. And she tried, and then at the end, what I love about this is that she gives her a really big laugh right at the end. So that's my favorite part of the whole thing. But take a listen to this, because this is Dari's daughter's contribution to the show this morning.
And she's nine, 10, somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And the news brought to you by Colcacchio Pizzeria. Right, here it is.
Yes, Amy.
All right.
Be your own cheerleader. That is great. I actually like that.
All right. So there we go.
It's sweet. Okay. So it was a busy day, obviously, for our finance minister yesterday. Now, some people breathed a sigh of relief when Pravin Gordhan emerged from the Pretoria High Court in the afternoon yesterday, confirming to journalists that he is still finance minister.
What kind of a country is this? What kind of a country is this where you even have to have that discussion?
It's because, you know, speculation, Gareth, has really, you know, had us gripped over the last 24 hours or so. And some people are excitable. Some people are nervous. Some people are just downright depressed.
Wow. Wow.
So the finance minister approached the court to have it declare that he does not have the power to intervene in the fight between Gupta-owned companies and the banks. You'll remember, of course, that four of our banks decided to close down their business accounts. So he went to court yesterday after arriving back in South Africa on Tuesday morning. He also made a stop over at Luthuli House to have what he called a discussion. He was, you know, very careful not to give out a whole lot of specifics with regards to what that discussion was about. The finance minister said, if there is anything official to say, we will say it. I am still the finance minister, and that is why I'm here to listen to how the application is going. End of story. So that was yesterday afternoon. But then yesterday evening, Julius Malema was like, no, that is not the side of the story that I have.
Oh, yeah?
According to the EFF leader, he released a series of tweets where he claims that Pravin Gordhan will be fired after Ahmed Katrada's funeral today. Yeah. In a series of tweets, Malema said that the ANC Secretary General, Gwede Mantashe, informed the finance minister of the president's intention to replace him with Brian Molefe. He tweeted, Pravin Gordhan and Nkebisi Jonas are going to be removed from the executive. The top six respects Zuma's prerogative to appoint and dismiss ministers. Speculation is that the duo may be fired tomorrow evening. That's tonight. After Uncle Kathy's funeral, Jay-Z will make sure that the funeral is not used as a launching pad for a campaign against him. So you decide.
Yeah.
Who do you believe? Do you believe Pravin Gordhan, who emerged from court yesterday saying, I am still the finance minister? Or do you believe Julius, who's got a whole bunch of claims under his sleeve?
But hang on, there's another thing I'm not sure is true.
Mm-hmm.
Is it fake news that the Quatrada family don't want the president to speak at his funeral? Because I saw that all over social media yesterday.
I tried to do research on that.
Yeah.
And
any luck?
There isn't an official statement that declares that. All I got, and Mabali, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, is the fact that the president is invited, but won't be speaking. But then I saw another article that said the president was invited, but won't be attending. And the deputy is going to take his place.
Yes, my buddy, what's the ceremony. Truth? Help us.
You need
help us.
There are all of these claims.
Well, the people that I saw tweeting about the fact that the Quatrada family asked the president not to lead the service, I didn't see, you know, anyone official tweeting that. So no journalists, no, you know, none of the news networks. The news agencies were basically tweeting and saying that, yes, the deputy president, Cyril Ramaphosa, is going to be leading the service. But as to whether or not it's because the family specifically asked that Jay-Z not be involved, that I cannot confirm for you, unfortunately. But yes, Cyril Ramaphosa is the man in charge.
Damn.
Yeah. Which, you know, I think a lot of, I saw a lot of people
relieved
and saying, well, it's only the right thing to do. We can't have the president, leading the service at Ahmed Quatrada's funeral.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, that's what we got so far.
But, you know, the same thing, Gareth, that you pointed out about Joe Mafela's memorial, where everyone started spinning and making it about them.
Yeah.
Is going to happen here, sadly.
Well, same with, damn it, I've forgotten his name now.
People can't help it. Who are you thinking about?
Sports star, actor, politician.
No, Mendoza.
Do you remember that?
As well.
Gosh, yeah.
That was bad.
Wasn't that Claudio Motsoeneng who had his paws all over that service?
Yeah, everyone will.
It's so tasteless. It's just, you know.
It's so in keeping with who these people are, unfortunately.
Yeah, these politicians who will grandstand, even Senzo Miyua's funeral. Remember, Jeff Radebe pitched up and started making a speech about the ANC. You're like, come on. Have you so little dignity that you're prepared to allow the family no time to spend thinking about their relative or themselves?
So that's why it's kind of...
You have to make it about you, don't you?
It's kind of odd that we even have to say this is refreshing, but Zenani Mandela was trending on Twitter yesterday for the mere fact that she made a statement on behalf of the Mandela family, and it was actually so genuine and sincere. And she was speaking on the angle of Ahmed Quatrada basically being her second father and how much he meant to her and her family, and really being moved to tears. It was all over Twitter. It's now all over YouTube as well. That is what you actually hope we'd see more of. But sadly now we see everyone and their mother speak on behalf of Ahmed Quatrada and how they absolutely know how he now felt about the country and how we, you know, wagging a finger in front of our faces for no reason.
So are we saying that those people who feel the need to use the funeral as a way of speaking out against the ANC, are we saying that those people are also being inappropriate?
I just think politicians at that time, the only time I ask them, this is not when, you know, there's that rule that like the day before the elections, you don't campaign.
Mm.
Remember that rule?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a gentleman's agreement that you don't, just for that day, you give people a moment to actually stop listening to your bullshit so they can make up their own minds. And I suppose if there is a, you know, if there's a death or something, the least you could do is just stop making it about your party or you on that day. Even if the person in question really loved the party. I mean, the way the ANC kind of tried to own Nelson Mandela, and of course he would have said he was an ANC man through and through. But there may just have been an actual human being there and an actual family.
Yeah.
And for you to use it to grandstand is just tactless and really, really cheap. If I ever die and any of you see someone trying to take me on board as part of what their message is, please Just kill them and throw them in the
body
coffin.
Body slam them.
Throw them in the coffin with me. Okay. Right there and there.
Sure. Yo, but then we're going to be accused of having, you know, caused unnecessary drama at your funeral.
We have this podcast as proof.
Yeah, yes. I'll be thrilled with you if you do that.
But I guess there are two sides to everything. And, okay, not in a politician's case, but I guess in a Joe Mafela fellow actors who are frustrated case where you don't get the spotlight on you, or you know you won't get such a public big platform where people will listen, where you do want to stand up and speak about how frustrating it is that you've been acting for 18 years, but you're still classified as a freelancer and you can't even get a loan. And is it tasteless slightly? I'll say yes, but also at the same time, I sort of get it. So
yeah, all right.
Yeah,
there's no what we basically come to here is there's no definite answer.
No, but we still do judge. That's what
absolutely.
Say.
So the funeral service for the struggle veteran is expected to take place from 10 o'clock this morning. It will be at the West Park Cemetery in Randburg. This is after Ahmed Katrada died in the early hours of Tuesday morning at the age of 87. Now, the president announced a state funeral for Katrada. Mm-hmm. And he's ordered that all South African flags fly at half mast. And Zuma also said that the deputy president, Cyril Ramaphosa, would lead the send-off. Katrada, remember, he wrote an open letter to the president back in 2016 asking him to resign.
I remember that.
Yeah. So, you know.
So this guy must not come out there at the funeral and claim all kinds of things about how great Ahmed Katrada was. If he was, he didn't want you. Right? That's clear.
Hmm.
The president should just stay the hell away. In any case, I think all he is at the moment is obsessed with his own survival. I don't think the president particularly cares about anything else that's going on.
Mm-mm.
I think he's really into sorting out his own problems. And there are a lot of problems. What else?
Okay, so over to America, where President Donald Trump yesterday signed an order to undo the Obama climate change regulations, keeping a campaign promise to support the coal industry and also calling into question U.S. support for an international deal to fight global warming.
Mm-hmm.
He was flanked by coal miners and coal company executives. Trump claimed that his energy independence executive order at the headquarters of the Environmental Protection Agency. And of course, this move has, caused a little bit of backlash from a coalition of 23 states and local governments, as well as environmental groups,
Sure.
Which called the decree a threat to public health, and they've vowed to fight it in court.
Huh. Well, Donald Trump doesn't care about the environment at all. He really doesn't care. He doesn't give a shit. He's going to meet with, coal.
Yeah. He's a businessman. He's a man of business, you know?
Well, yeah, but we got to live on this planet. It's kind of all we've got.
I know, but he doesn't care about the stupid environment.
No, he really doesn't. He doesn't, right?
I don't think he does. No. I mean, I don't know.
He is the kind of guy who would, he would create like this post-apocalyptic landscape if it meant that we could generate profit. We've got to have jobs, he keeps saying. We've got to have jobs. Now, apparently there have been more jobs created in solar and wind and renewable energy than there have been in coal or in oil.
Okay, is this a this must be a recent
now,
development.
Recently, in the last 2-3 years, more jobs are created in renewable energy than in old-fashioned fossil fuel energy, right?
Okay.
Sure.
So you would think
new industries, boom.
Yeah, right. And this is an industry that obviously, there's a lot of investment in. I mean, the Chinese, who live in smog because of precisely this problem that they've been using fossil fuels, and they've industrialized so quickly, and they've got a massive amount of manufacturing going on. You can't breathe the air in Beijing. They've developed an app. I saw this on CNN. The Chinese have developed an app where ordinary citizens can report pollution.
Yeah.
So if you're walking around, you go, oh, factory, make a big smoke. You put it up on your thing, you send it in on the app, and the government will come and find out what's going on at that factory. right?
Well, they'll assess the profit margin being created first, then they will.
Yeah. But the fact is, like, they've got a plan, and they're acutely aware of it, because you cannot see a couple of meters in front of you on a bad day in Beijing. It's that bad. You wouldn't want to live there. I wouldn't want to live there. The place is just horrendous. Now, if Donald Trump thinks that the best way to go is to keep on pumping carbon dioxide and disgraceful messes into the atmosphere, if he thinks that the best thing to do is to lay down oil pipelines all over the place, to drill off the coast, to frack inland, he's one of those people. He's an old school dude. Then he's one of those people who doesn't care as much about tomorrow as he does about yesterday, because he's showing that in his actions, right?
It's also just so easy going the whole coal route, because you're going to hang out with some old meatheads who you've probably known for generations.
That's it.
Whereas renewable energy, it's new young people who have very dynamic minds and doing things that are maybe not as known. What's Donald going to do? He hasn't got the vision for that kind of stuff.
No, he doesn't.
If Donald could, he would go back to the 80s tomorrow.
I mean, Donald wants to keep manufacturing the car instead of thinking about what might be next. Donald wants to keep on doing old school stuff in terms of technology. Like, he doesn't think about the next big thing. He's thinking about what worked yesterday. Now, let's keep doing that. And this one, I'm afraid he's got it wrong here. We need the air. We kind of need it to breathe.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
There was an article that I saw earlier this month about a group of Chinese lawyers who are suing the government because of the pollution problem. They're actually suing their government.
Good on them.
Yeah.
Imagine being a child waking up to every morning.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the variety of health problems that people in China experience as a result of breathing in that smog every day?
Yeah, I reckon if you had to test an 8-year-old Chinese person's lungs, you would think that they are chain smokers. They probably have the lungs of a 40-year-old pub crawler / smoker person.
Here's a nice message. This is from somebody says, "Morning, beautiful people. I have a new recruit for you. Please welcome Tim from Belito and make it official this morning." Tim from Belito, welcome to the show this morning. You are officially our newest listener. Isn't that great?
Yay!
Very nice. Welcome. Morning, beautiful people. G, do yourself a favor. Discover an artist called Mikola Petri, who's one of the best recorder players. I promise you, you'll change your mind. All right, I'll go and look into that. And I'm listening to you guys. Las Vegas is in a desert, so I'm sure Cape Town could do something. Well, apparently they've got this huge aquifer under Cape Town that they just have to...
Yes, it's hard work, Gareth. It's easy to bitch and moan.
Get in there, guys. Empty that goddamn aquifer if you need it. From a confused listener, Gareth, can any citizen take a minister to court if they don't get their way? I'm not sure what the rules are there. You can't just vexatiously take a minister to court because you don't get your way. But if a minister has been negligent or in dereliction of duty, yes, you can. Talking about pollution in China, says Alistair, they say that walking one day in Shanghai is like smoking 10 cigarettes. That's so they've been to your point.
Ooh,
one reason why I moved to Barcelona, because Alistair used to be in Shanghai. So there we go. Isn't that frightening? Let's check in on some sport.
One day is one day. Oh.
That's the news, brought to you by Colcacchio Pizzeria and my buddy singing for free.
I'm sorry.
Right, so yesterday, the Proteas went out with a tail between the legs, 80 for 5 against New Zealand, an absolute pitiful display from the top order. And it was all that happened today in Hamilton, right? So they had to try and literally block for their lives. Thankfully, though, the rain came down. No play whatsoever on day 5.
Yeah.
Proteas draw. So, I mean, people can say, oh, they were lucky. But, you know, this thing comes in turns and roundabouts, right? There's been times where the Proteas have been cock-blocked by the rain before. We're not going to bitch about this. Circle of life, Hakuna Matata. So what this does mean, however, is that the rain in Hamilton has made the Proteas 3.87 million rand richer.
How
cool is that, huh?
But how does that happen?
Well, April the 1st, right? It's not just a time where presidents try to ruin countries and cabinets. It's also the time when the ICC has their test rankings cut off.
Oh.
So India beats Australia yesterday, right? In that latest series. So not only are they not friends, but Australia are very much under the toe of India on the rankings wise.
Okay.
So they get $1 million.
All right.
On the top spot, right? And they also get the mythical ICC mace, which they can wave at each other and act like. It looks like something you play Quidditch on.
Oh, okay. The ICC mace.
India get that because they've had a nice run of home fixtures. You know, they went through playing loads of away fixtures. Mm-hmm. And again, everything balances out. So now they've played a bunch of games at home. So now they're on top. So they get $1 million. Now, because Approach has finished second, they get $500,000, which makes 6.45 million rand. If they were to have lost this test today against New Zealand, they would have finished third, which meant they would have only got $200,000. So what a cool way to spend a day watching rain, knowing you're getting richer. Cool. And then England, they finished fourth, so they get $100,000. Happy days. But, you know, it's a long, hard series when you go away to New Zealand for so long. There's very little to do there. So the Proteas is showing a bit of fatigue, but now they've got some big questions. How can they keep JP Duminy in this team? Who's going to open the batting? Blah, blah, blah. Lots to think about here because England, in England, is going to be bloody tough. It's going to be really, really tough. A lot tougher than what Sri Lanka have given us. A lot tougher than what Australia even gave us in Australia. So lots of questions here for Faf du Plessis and his team. But JP Duminy has got to piss off now. There's no doubt about it. I know Darryl Cullinan is probably the most hated person in this country, but the thing I posted on social media recently where he said that JP Duminy is one of the luckiest cricketers of all time, it's so true. Tom Eaton actually wrote a really good article yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Comparing the stats of JP Duminy and everyone else who's been given the same or less chances, it's actually embarrassing how the lazy selectors have just stuck with Duminy because he seems the right sort. You know, he's got an earring. He played T20 cricket in India. You know, he's a classy player to watch. He's got a good first-class record, but he is shit at international level in Test cricket. He can't play off-spin, and he can't play short balls. So pretty much, if you can bowl off-spin, you will bowl at JP Duminy. And yesterday's dismissal really, really just wrapped it up for everybody. He left a ball that went straight into the stumps. He left a straight one.
All right.
He just has no idea what off-spin is. It's not the hardest thing. The ball turns from left to right. Lots of things to worry about there. Speaking of cricket, Fikile Razmataz, everywhere minister, is having a meeting with CSA very shortly about overturning the international ban. Now, there was that imminent persons group report thing, which went out and basically said that no sport in this whole country, except for football, is transformed into what they really want in government. Now, Cricket South Africa, who I believe is probably the most transformed, the most proactive, the most progressive of all the sports in this country, they were hauled over the coals here, just like Saru, just like everyone else, for not having enough players that were not white.
Oh, right. But cricket's doing okay, right?
Cricket's brilliant. Cricket is, if you were to look at a people's team in this country, right, because this is what these politicians are always crapping on about, sort of, not really. So you look at that team, and you look at the players that have come through, you look at the players who are doing well. Another reason why JP Duminy shouldn't be there. There's enough talented black, colored, Indian, whatever players out there that he doesn't need to be there to fulfill any sort of role. So Cricket South Africa bore the brunt of this whole thing. And now they've been having meetings and saying, look, guys, we're doing a lot of great stuff here. While Fikile and the rest of his entourage sit in their asses and do nothing, but where they should be maybe creating facilities for kids in these areas that are going to improve empower transformation. They're not doing that. They just wish that Cricket South Africa would make this all happen. Okay. The magic wand will just happen. The private sector will just spend billions and they'll never have to do anything. Well, that's not quite how it works, but no point telling an ignoramus that. Anyway, Cricket South Africa basically saying, we've got all these hubs around the country. They're doing amazing things. We're getting great numbers. We're getting great talent come through.
Yeah.
And I, for one, who I'm quite cynical a lot of the time, I think Cricket South Africa are doing a great job.
All right.
So they're going to have this meeting, and then Razmataz, Miss SA, whatever his face, is going to then say, okay, cool. You guys can now host international events again. What does international events do? Creates employment. Mm-hmm. What's employment do?
Mm-hmm.
It's employment. We need that kind of stuff. So stop cock blocking cricket and sports. It's what brings money to this country somehow. Anyway. Right. Speaking of money, right? So you know who Neymar is. He's a super talented Brazilian guy who literally plays in the shadow of Messi at Barcelona.
Yes.
This is something that Jose Mourinho is making rather apparent. So he has apparently been in contact with Neymar saying, look, you're never going to go anywhere playing behind Messi and Suarez, because, you know, it's the whole MSN triple threat at the front there for Barcelona. So Jose is saying that we will bring you to Man United. You can be the big star. You can take this club to new heights. You are going to be, it's going to be all about you. In order to do so, they'll have to spend $216 million.
Because you are kidding.
He has signed a relatively new contract with Barcelona. So if Man United were to bring Neymar to Old Trafford, they would have to spend basically double what they spent on Paul Pogba. Paul Pogba, you know, the record-breaking deal, literally double that. It is crazy. He'll have to be paid double of what Wayne Rooney gets paid. Wayne Rooney gets overpaid a lot.
Well, yeah, okay? I mean, totally.
You think that they're willing to spend, again, $216 million to get in there, right? Now, we're not talking weekly salary here, which would probably be, I don't know, £600,000, £700,000 to get in there. There's so much on one player. It must really grate your balls if you're a really good defender or a midfielder or a goalkeeper, and you look at the money that gets thrown at these strikers as this quick fix, all solving plan. Look, Neymar's talented, there's no doubt about it, but will he gel in the middle of England, where the weather's dreadful and, you know, it's much more tough and abrasive kind of football? There's no guarantee here. So in order to spend $216 million to find that out, that is a big call. And again, Jose Mourinho, he's a bit like government. It's not his money, so he doesn't give a toss. But now try to justify that to the shareholders and the board of Man United. This is going to be very interesting. Again, look, it's a lot of speculation. I know a lot of this time people do this in order to get the name of the clubs out there. That's what teams like Man United sell so many jerseys.
Yeah, you make a bit of a noise.
You make a bit of hype for yourself.
Sure.
But if that goes through, just imagine that. Double of Paul Pogba, essentially, to get Neymar there.
It's outrageous.
Staying with football. Now, I know we give Bafana a lot of stick, right? They're always seen as a bunch of losers. Sorry, I can't keep quoting that guy. They're seen as like the sort of far inferior national team as opposed to the pro tiers of the Springboks. Mm-hmm. Springboks, of course, are really shite right now, so there goes that argument. But did you know that Bafana are currently on their longest ever unbeaten streak? Last night they lost to Angola, which was a disappointing result. Sorry, they didn't lose to them. They drew 0-0. Felt like a bit of a loss, though, because they really should have beaten them. But that is now 17 games unbeaten for Bafana Bafana. 17 games. That's not bad, huh? Mm-mm. That's something to be pretty happy about.
Yeah, we don't... why are you the only person talking about this?
Well, it's going up in a few sites here and there. But 17 games without a loss. I know some of the competition's been rather, you know, substandard. Like, if the Bucks win 17 games out of loss, they would have had to beat the world's best over and over and over. Well, here in South Africa, not to poo-poo their record, but they have played against teams that are, you know, field people who are most unemployed. So, it's still, you've got to look at the positives. 17 games now unbeaten for Bafana Bafana. Very, very good. And finally, tomorrow, obviously, we will catch up on what's happening in the weekend, all the fixtures for football and rugby and all that kind of stuff. But Kerwin Bosch, we spoke about how the fact that this guy is the future of SA Rugby, he really is one of those great young players. He's everything that JP Duminy will never be. He's just so exciting, great talent, great composure.
Duminy's coming in for shots this morning. Wow, he's having a bad start to his day if he's listening to us.
Kerwin Bosch, so he's 19 years old, right? That means there's so many opportunities for this guy. He can play for the junior box, the under-20 side, right? Or he can play with the Sharks, and he can ultimately maybe even play for the Springboks in the international window against France. Such is his form right now. All of these options are on the table. But if he does play for the junior box, which I really believe he should, I think he should always play because it's a developmental thing, right? Uh-huh. Let him shine, build up his confidence, play with guys his own age, and he can really then take his step by step in towards greatness rather than just, you know, going straight out into the top flight. Use the luxury afforded to you. But if this happens, then suddenly he won't be available for a lot of Super Rugby. Now, the Sharks are going to weigh this up and think, shit, this guy's really good. Pat Lambie's mostly broken. It's going to be such a difficult decision to kind of make, because if he doesn't play, most of May, he won't be there for the Sharks, which is a crucial time. The Sharks have a really great fixture list this year. They've made a great start, got lots of momentum. They really can get high up in the log, then get hometown playoff rugby. So big developments on issues here around the star player. But I think you've always got to look at the player. This guy's important. It's important for the growth of the Sharks and the Springboks. Let this dude play age group rugby while he still can.
All right.
And then he can hang out with the old guys.
And just on the issue of our sports minister, I saw a really, really revolting picture of him and Miss South Africa.
Now, is that a real picture?
Yep.
So it hasn't been doctored.
It's kind of like saying, is that a real minister? You want to say no, but then ultimately the answer is yes.
So why? I mean,
what's the context? Honestly,
he's the minister of Razzmatazz. Right.
And
a few questions.
No, but you can. And this pic, it's not like this picture is a selfie that was taken.
No.
It looks like it happened in.
It looks like a matric dance.
Yeah.
Awkward.
It looks like it was an organized photo shoot in a studio. Why?
Where she had to be sitting down, otherwise she would tower over him.
So first of all, the guy is he's trying really hard to look cool. I mean, he does look like an awkward matric dance photo. She looks beautiful. I haven't seen Miss South Africa until I saw this picture, and she's a pretty girl. I think a lot of people are upset that they can't figure out whether she's colored or white or,
yeah,
you know,
that's so
that
important.
Upsets people. Yeah. So she's sitting there, and then Figile is standing next to her. And the reason she's sitting is because she would be about 3 times his height if she stood up next to him, because he's a dwarf. And he's wearing sunglasses.
It's just weird.
It's just such a bizarre.
I don't understand.
I mean, he looks so douchey.
This is why he is the minister of good times. What
but
in
not
his portfolio
even,
or mandate said he
neither
needs to photograph?
Neither person in that picture looks like they should be in it at all.
But I don't understand why this photo was taken, because there is no other photo like it that exists of this Miss SA with any other government official. Why?
But also, like,
probably by special request from Razzmatazz, because he's feeling a little bit left out.
Of course he is. And
what's he got to do at the moment?
And the sunglasses? Someone tweeted me yesterday when I put this out and said, you wear sunglasses indoors if you are A, blind, or B, a doer.
Yeah, well, we know which one he is. Let's get to Anthea and check in on the money shot. She's waiting on the line to tell us all about the money.
She works hard for the money. So hard for it, honey. She works hard for the money, so you better treat her right.
It's like a folksy version, Anthea.
Indeed.
All right.
Every day
got?
A new one.
Yeah, every day a new crisis. So Pravin seems to still be finance minister, but for how long?
Yes, and I think that's exactly what the entire market is asking. Gareth, yesterday, before the market opened, there was a headline on Bloomberg that said the president had told South African communists, and I'm not misquoting, it actually said that, that he was going to fire the finance minister. So, of course, you can imagine the rand completely blew up, traded above 13, above 13.05 against the dollar. But then nothing happened, and the rand pulled back to about 12.85. The currency is still very volatile, and it's doing something we call gap trading. So despite being only a small portion of the global economy, we are actually really a very liquid market, and not only the locals, but the internationals like trading our market, which means that the bid-offer spread is quite narrow, and that's a good thing. So our currency actually trades to 4 decimal places. So it trades 12.8 spot 8.512 to, you know, 12 spot 8.513. Basically, it trades to 1/100 of a cent at a time. But yesterday, like in minutes, I saw it jumping from 12.85 to 12.92 and then back again. And I think that's just an indication that traders are nervous. No one knows what to think. And traders are making what looks like irrational moves. And if I was an international investor and if I was looking at that, I would say, no, thanks. I don't need that risk. I'd pull my orders and actually just look at the next most liquid emerging market or most predictable emerging market currency. So this uncertainty, I think, having not a great impact on our markets. I mean, I say that, but it wasn't a bad day yesterday. The market was up 1.2%, almost $2 billion traded. And when I say negative impact, I think long term it will have a negative impact if this kind of uncertainty carries on. And then mostly resources, dual listed shares took advantage of the weaker currency yesterday. Also, we had positive global markets, so that helped us. I think local investors still very nervous, you know, just sitting there waiting on their hands to see if we'll still have a finance minister in June when the ratings agencies come and look at us again.
Right.
And then just on retailers, nice day for Tencent yesterday. Firstly, Amazon finally confirmed that they've acquired Souq, the UAE online retailer from Tencent. We were speculating about this the other day, right? And I thought the price tag would be closer to $1 billion. But they haven't disclosed, but apparently it's between $650 to $800 million. Naspers owns 36% of Souq, so at a midpoint of $725 million, that's an approximate $260 million windfall for Naspers, so good for us.
Right.
And then I'm quite excited, probably more than I should be, to see that Tencent is now one of the top five shareholders of Tesla. Tesla did a rights issue on the 17th of March, and Tencent bought a 5% stake for $1.8 billion, which makes us hashtag investors all very, very tiny shareholders in Tesla through our shareholding in Naspers.
Nice.
The Tesla share price was up 3% yesterday. In reality, it's very small. I mean, in terms of earnings or influence for Tencent, you know, it's really almost immaterial. It's not even 1% of Tencent's market cap. Mm-hmm. But hopefully, I think it's an indicator of a strategic move by Tencent towards electric and autonomous vehicles, which we now as shareholders refer to as EV and AV. So as I say, probably more excited than I should be. And then Gareth, I'm not sure if I'm late to the party with this, but I caught a glimpse of SAA's financial position yesterday. And when I mentioned in the office, everyone seemed to have spoken about it away from me on Monday already. We haven't spoken about it, have we? No.
No.
So for the first 11 months of SAA's current financial year, they more than trebled their net loss from the previous year. How
is that possible? How badly do you have to run a place for that to happen?
Exactly. They made a $4.3 billion net loss. I mean, and this is despite revenue of 27.6 billion rand for the 11 months. The crazy part is that operating costs of 29 billion rand was 9% under budget, which includes a 900 million rand under expenditure on aircraft maintenance. So for the budget, they've underspent. I mean, like, I'm not sure I want to fly with an airline that doesn't maintain its planes. Jeez. And so basically, they seem to be doing everything wrong. Lower than expected income, particularly from the airline passenger business. And then they budgeted a $35 a barrel oil price. I mean, are they the only ones who don't know where oil is trading at the moment? How can they get the average so wrong, considering that the last 2 years, Brent crude has traded at $35 a barrel for, I think, a month and a half in the last 2 years. And outside of that, it's traded...
It's like the world's dumbest suckers, right?
Well, just business people. I mean, like, you know, the government now has guarantees to SAA of 19 billion rand, which is not, it's not a cash flow item. It's just a guarantee. And it means that if SAA doesn't repay their loans, the government will have to cough up. And, you know, that comes out of your tax money. And, like, based on all these numbers, their financing costs have increased by 44%. In other words, they're borrowing more to fund a loss-making operation and therefore paying more interest and therefore generating more of a loss.
Well, this is why when I spoke to Zweli Mkhize yesterday, and that interview will probably go live next week, who's the Treasurer General of the ANC, I said to him, why is the ANC so terrible at appointing good people to run parastatals? And why is every parastatal a disaster? And I can't even remember his answer. You'll have to listen to it yourself. But it is such an embarrassment that not one of our parastatals seems able to turn a profit when very many of them are monopolies or close to monopolies. Isn't it insane, Anthea? Imagine you've cornered the market. You're the only guy in town who sells bread, and everyone else who sells bread's out of business, and you still can't make a profit out of your bread. You have to be the dumbest fuck in the world to not get that right.
And think about all the companies we talk about every single day with fantastic CEOs. Please don't tell me you can't put one of them into running a business like this.
And don't think for a second that Dudu Mieni hasn't taken a salary every month despite this huge loss.
There's something.
My God.
It's apparently there's a meeting in Parliament today.
Yeah. Oh, really? About SAA?
Yes, where the Standing Committee on Finance will scrutinize SAA's financials. And what are they going to say to them, though? It's so extraordinary.
Ashley says, question for Anthea. Will the ratings guys only downgrade us in June if Molefe comes in this week, or will they make an exception and downgrade us earlier than June?
I don't know. They have the authority to downgrade us earlier than June. I don't know. It depends on them. It really does. If they think it's really bad, they will downgrade us immediately.
Well, I'm not so sure I want to fly SAA either anymore. If they're not spending the right amount of money on maintaining their planes, and they don't seem to know how to maintain their planes, and they're wasting left, right, and center, paying too much for oil, it just seems to me that this is not a business anyone should support.
It's very worrying.
And I'm sad to say that there are a lot of good people at SAA.
Indeed.
It's being run by lunatics.
Shocking business.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Anything else you want to throw in?
No, I was just going to say the U.S. closed higher last night, and then Asia's a bit stronger, except for Japan. So with a weaker rand this morning, hopefully we'll have another positive day on the market.
All right.
If our president doesn't say anything.
Please, Mr. President, just don't say anything. That's all we ask, right?
Exactly. Nkandla.
CliffCentral.com.